This week on the Linux Action Show, we get the insider scoop on the OpenSUSE build service and SUSE Studio. Find out how these two services alone could change the landscape of Linux forever. Then we bust out an Android app pick so rad it just might help you run from the cops. Then we wrap up our news segment with the top 5 features of Ubuntu 10.10, plus so much more. Oh, this week on the Linux Action Show. And welcome to Linux Action Show, Season 12, Episode 10, the season finale of Season 12, Episode...
Right.
Did I get that?
Yep.
Yes. I'm Brian. Chris.
Hey there, Brian. India's $35 Linux tablet. Well, it runs Linux.
It sure as heck.
Check this little thing out. I gotta make a disclaimer here. It is a prototype, Brian, but it is a functional prototype that they demoed. They revealed the prototype on July 22nd at a public event. They say it will have a 7-inch color touchscreen, 2 gigabytes of storage, Wi-Fi, Ethernet, going to run either Android or some other distro of Linux. Get ready for this, dude. They eventually want to get the price down to like $20 and then down to $10.
Yeah.
They say one laptop per child, $100. Please.
Dude.
Isn't that crazy?
Dude.
I mean, first of all, if they can pull off a $35 touchscreen Linux tablet.
All by itself. Holy crap.
One for every room of the house.
Every room of the house. And seriously, and if it gets down to below $20, at that point, you accidentally drop it. Do I want to bend over and pick it up?
You do, but that's just because you want to be able to have something because you're probably walking to the bathroom.
Yeah, just because, you know, it's either that or you have to walk another 10 feet to get the other backup
that you had sitting over
on the shelf. it's awesome. At this point, like, it's hard to tell from the pictures how good the screen is. The screen looks all washed out, but then again, it's a photo taken from a distance
in
sunlight. Hard to say. You know, the form factor looks very generic, but honestly, I like the look of the form factor of it better than I like, you know, a lot of the tablets that are out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look too fancy. It's just this brick with a screen and some buttons, and I like that.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because they say it's going to have an ARM processor in it and maybe even the potential of a low-end, really low-end webcam. Also,
that's awesome.
The power consumption of 2 watts. I mean, the stuff they can pull off with Linux is just so cool. I was listening to a high-end video production guy, and he was talking about how they're building some hardware green screening that is actually just going to be software inside a box.
Yeah.
And they wanted to go with Mac OS X because their whole production from top to bottom is all the Apple Final Cut Suite, which a lot of shops his size are. But he said when it came down to actually building hardware, they tried to do it on a Mac, and it was just completely unfeasible.
Like,
from a cost standpoint, from a customized. So this all-Mac shop is going to go Linux. Same thing these guys are doing, because when you have the total flexibility and freedom of modifying a free operating system, you completely eliminate that cost.
Yes.
I mean, there's the cost of customization, but there's so many things already out there ready to use.
And so many people who specialize in customizing Linux of various types to fit onto these
and
devices.
Plus,
and it's just,
You just go Linux and you make headlines and you get guys like us talking about your new product. So I think it's really cool, and I'm going to follow it.
Incredibly cool. I've been jonesing hard for a great portable comic book reader.
Yeah, I can see that. A 7-inch screen might not be too bad.
You have to
get it just right, though, because it's not going to fit everything.
Yeah, it's not going to fit everything. Well, like right now, I use my little tablet.
Yep.
You know, but my little tablet's a little like, what, 1/2-inch screen. It's super tiny.
So you could probably do one cell at a time, right?
No. What I can do on this tablet, if you set it kind of laid on its side so it's landscape, and you set it so it fits to width, you have to scroll up and down, but you can still read.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Where it's, you know, what matters really almost more than the size is the actual resolution.
Right.
Because
you want that picture artwork to be
like
vibrant.
On the bigger tablets. Like look at the iPad. The iPad's got the size enough, but its resolution isn't very good.
Yeah.
So when you blow up a comic book that size, you can't read the fine text.
You're not, yeah.
You have to actually
zoom in
order to do it. Whereas on this, it looks like the resolution would be enough to where you could Google,
that'd be pretty
scroll,
cool,
but you'd still be able to read it.
That would be really neat.
And I'd like that. For $35, I could have a comic book reader
in my bathroom.
Yeah.
A comic book reader.
In the kitchen.
Over the sink in my bathroom.
On each side of the bed.
On each side of the bed.
In the shower.
Seriously, I could buy like seven of them for like $200-some dollars.
I know.
Which is cheaper than an iPad. And at that point, that's just ridiculous.
I know,
I don't
dude.
Care how slow it is. I can multitask by simply holding multiple tablets. Just
that's
friggin'
an awesome,
awesome
form of multitasking.
That's what I'm saying.
Hey, you know what we should talk about before we go too much further? We got a huge show.
What
should
we talk about?
I've got a really cool Android pick. But first, I wanted to say holla to the buddies over at GoDads.com. GoDaddy.com, Brian.
Well,
what do you have
that's
for me?
Interesting that you bring this up because this episode of the Linux Action Show, the season finale of this season of the Linux Action Show, is sponsored by GoDaddy.com, the world's largest web host and domain name registrar. Starting at less than $5 per month, web hosting from GoDaddy.com includes 99% uptime, 99.9.
Yeah,
excuse
buddy.
Me.
You gotta get all those nines.
I gypped them on 0.9%, and that's not cool because that 0.9% means something.
Yeah.
That's 24/7 support and free access to GoDaddy Hosting Connection, the place to quickly install like tons. It says 50 free applications here, but I think it's like a million.
It's way more than 50.
WordPress, so you can just like one click install WordPress. You're like, I want a WordPress site. I get this thing. I go and go into the web hosting GoDaddy Connection, whatever thing it's called. Blick, click, blick, click, blick, click.
It's not Metropolis
WordPress.
Anymore, Brian.
It used to be Metropolis. Now it's web
hosting connection.
Hosting connection. Anyway, 10% Linux, 20% Linux 20.
You know, this is kind of funny, but I didn't realize how many different types of domain names there were until I went over to GoDaddy's website.
And started scrolling down.
Did you know there's a .vg? I didn't know. A .idv, .tw? I want a .idv, Jupiter Broadcasting, .idv.
.idv, .tw.
And you know what? If I wanted to do
that,
I would just buy the domain on my awesome GoDaddy Android app. Which I will now tell you my Android pick of the week. So thank you to GoDaddy for their sponsorship of
awesome.
The Linux Action Show. Now, the app I want to talk about today is one of these apps you'd be like, that just sounds like a dumb thing to have. And it's called Scanner Radio. There's a couple of different of these types of applications in the Android marketplace. But Scanner Radio is like the other ones. It lets you tune in to police radio broadcasts, like in like the police in a car or fire or aid cars. Because a lot of them now stream that over the internet.
Yeah.
So
that's
this lets
cool.
you say, hey, what's near me? Find what's near me so it hits the GPS. And the one thing I like about Scanner Radio is it hits the GPS a lot faster than a lot of the other apps do. So then it tells you, it breaks it down into category. You see less than 25 miles away, 25 plus, things like that. And then you choose the one you want. It goes in there and it'll buffer the stream and play it. It also offers It also offers a host of like DVR type
functions.
Unable
to connect.
Yeah, my reception.
It's chat.
It has a chat for each one, too.
Oh, that's twistedly
that's
weird.
That's weird, right?
That's super weird.
So, here's
so you
where can, I
can tune
in
to like, people getting pulled over and chat about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so not
that
cool.
That sucker just got busted. But also, here's where I actually use it. Every now and then, I fire the sucker up if I hear sirens around my house and I want to know what's going on. Why are there like why is there like a police brigade like down the street?
Yeah.
But what's actually more useful is when I'm driving down the street and there's a traffic incident, I fire this sucker up. I hit nearest near me, so I get the cops that are in the area behind
around me.
And I get to listen to what the traffic incident is. So I know exactly. So without even having to listen to the radio broadcast, I know exactly where the accident's at and how serious it is. So then, based on kind of experience, I know, oh man, that's going to be a major blockage. I need to get the F around that. Or maybe it's going to be a minor thing, so I'll just stick it out. That is actually, for somebody who drives as much as I do for my job.
That's awesome.
It's really nice.
That's pretty cool.
So, and it also, of course, runs in, see now it is actually playing in the background. It runs in the background, and it can run in streaming mode or it can run in monitoring mode where it can listen for emergency situations around you based on the flag and then it'll alert you.
Really?
It's pretty neat. So
that's
check it out.
Cool.
I'll have a link in the show notes. It is Scanner Radio.
And it's free.
Yeah, and I've tried a couple of different ones. It's totally free. I like the other ones too. I'm trying to remember what the other one was called, but, Scanner something, and it's a good app too. So if you've already got it, don't worry about it too much. But I really like Scanner Radio. Give it a check; you'll like it.
Fancy.
Hey, before we go into the news, we should mention Jupiter Knight and Brian Lunduke's Jupiter Files are rocking
every day.
Every day. So go over to jupiterbroadcasting.com if you want to check out those new shows. They're daily shows.
Yeah, and if you want to tune in live, it's jupiterbroadcasting.com/live. Jupiter Files is every day, 7 a.m. Pacific time, or every day, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Pacific time. And when's the Jupiter at Night?
9 p.m., and it is Monday through Thursday.
Fancy.
And it's at the same place, jupiterbroadcasting.com/live, which, incidentally, is also the same place you could watch the Linux Action Show live
what?
Sunday mornings at
which
10 a.m.
Which a lot of people are doing right now.
Yep. And we should say, whenever we talk about times, because we're really bad at time math, we're talking Pacific.
It's Pacific time. We're talking Pacific daylight Seattle right time, yeah.
Hey, Brian.
I don't even know. Like PDT, PST, whatever. I don't
we're
know
in the We're in the PDT
even.
Right now.
Whatever. It's Pacific. It's
and
Seattle
then you have Pacific
time.
Nighttime and Pacific
it's Seattle
daylight.
Time, which I hear is similar to Los Angeles and San Francisco time.
Yeah.
These are the only bits I know, and I don't know that for a fact.
I think there might be a quantum slip in there.
Because
sure.
when I travel, I just reset all my clocks because I don't know. So if I go down to L.A., I'm like, what time is it? I don't know. I have to look at a clock and reset everything.
I go, what I do is I walk out into the sun. And then depending on where the sun's at, I sort of position my head. And then however the sun reflects off the part in my hair onto the ground, I know what time it is. And that's really the only time that I care about.
You are retarded. You are a retarded, retarded man.
All right, Brian.
Hey, Chris.
Let's do the news.
I want to do the news right now. All right? What's new in the news this week?
Oh, all right, Brian. Our top story.
I liked the little thing. That was a good little shake.
It's a new one, right?
Well,
I think in 120
before,
episodes, I don't think I've ever done
I'm
that
I'm amazed
before.
That you haven't ever done that before.
I got every now and then introduce a new one.
I'm blown away right now.
I thought we'd do our top news story.
This is a groundbreaking episode of the Linux Action Show.
Changed
That's
everything.
Just fantastic.
I thought I would, the top story I thought would be more of an update on an important long-term open source issue, and that is the little progress update here on WebM, also known as VP8.
Also known as WebM.
You guys remember the Google I.O. conference where Google announced
Or WeBum.
WeBum, yeah.
Yeah, the WeBum update.
They announced the WeBum codec, and it's essentially going to be the open source replacement for H.264's. It's the answer to H.264's question, sort of the successor to Ogg Theory in terms of open source codecs. But one of the issues that you might notice, the Linux Action Show here still releases an Ogg Theory, not WebM.
Correct, sir.
And one of the problems with that is the initial implementation from Google, the encoder and decoder were very, very, very slow. Very slow. I mean, to encode this episode of Linux Action Show would be like a 24-hour process. Way too slow.
I'm going to be honest. It's too long.
Too long, Brian.
It's too long.
Too long. So you might... I don't think we did cover this story, but Jason Gart Glazer. I don't know if I'm getting the pronunciation of his name right. But
there's no way you're pronouncing his name right.
But if
his name could be Tom Smith and you'd mispronounce it.
I like Glazer, though, because it makes me think of donuts.
I'm going to go with Tom Glacier because I feel like he's awesome and he's got like one of those ice pick things where he climbs things and he's always holding it.
And glaciers can move stuff as they move. So he is the developer.
Whatever, glaciers don't move.
At least the primary developer is my understanding between the X264. That's the open source implementation of H.264. Boy, I'm throwing a lot of word soup at you guys, but hang with me for a second because I'm getting to a good point.
Yeah, okay.
He makes that X264 implementation. He took a look at WebM and he said, "Ah, this decoder and encoder are junk. This is just junk." So instead of being a pissy little brat, he well, because that's a lot of times what happens, right? He went over and
he didn't just whine. He dove in.
He dove in. I love that. He teamed up with Ronald. Bajote, and David Conard. Conrad. Conrad. Let's go with Conrad.
Spell Bajote.
Bajute?
Spell it.
B-U-L. Oh, I didn't see the L. I had it zoomed out. B-L-U-T-J-E.
Bolt J?
And David Conrad. And they've come up with a community implementation.
You Conrad like that.
Awesome. And they came up with a free decoder built into FFmpeg. They're calling it FFVP8. Reason why you guys need to care about this is this is actually substantially faster than the one Google's released so far. I mean, we're talking massive speed improvements, which is key for WebM to take off, and they haven't even necessarily begun to optimize it yet. They just moved their implementation over on top of FFmpeg, got a huge increase. Surprisingly, one of the biggest increases in performance without a single code optimization for the chip is the Atom processor in netbooks.
What?
Yeah, very awesome. So with this kind of progress,
rad.
And I should mention,
rad.
They weren't screwing around either. They were doing tests of 1080p clips, which is specifically where I saw. As soon as you hit HD with WebM, that's where I was seeing issues.
Yeah, it tanks.
It was tanking, and so I don't know. I'm really getting more and more excited about with
hey, if
about
we can
WebM.
Get, if we can get the WebM implementation up there and it's actually like rocking, I'm
right?
all on board.
I think so too. And I would love to start being able to.
I am not tied to any one format. I don't care what it is, but
whatever
if it
works.
If it rocks,
yeah.
and everyone can use it on their machines, whether it be Linux or whatever the other ones are, great. That's what we're gonna do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm excited. I'm looking forward to a lot of the online streaming sites getting support. A lot of those sites like YouTube and archive.org and a lot of other backends, almost all the other sites on the backend are using Linux and FFmpeg to transcode all of their videos.
They are.
So good FFmpeg support is a key element in getting WebM adoption going.
You bet.
So if WebM takes off, that's huge for the Linux desktop, and we just got a major first step in that direction. That's very awesome. So there's your WebM update.
That is your WebM update of the week.
Your WebM update, because we haven't talked about it in a little while. The next thing we want to talk about is, I haven't done this for a while, a community member of the Linux Action Show. He's watching the live stream right now, and he's been a follower for a little while.
Say what?
He started up a project. It's called Client Pi, and it's a project management site. It's really cool looking.
I love Pi so much.
I know, right? And he built it all on top of open source technology, so it's really great for that.
Pumpkin pie.
And you know what else he did?
Like BlackBerry Pi.
He used our GoDaddy promo code to register his domain. He used our code Linux. So you got to respect that.
You know what you could do?
So clientpi.com.
With our promo code, you could make a cherry pie for Brian.com website.
And would you just sell cherry pies to Brian? Or just come up with ways to make donations to deliver pies to Brian?
I think it's donations to deliver cherry pies to Brian.
The charity pie drive.
Charity pie drive for Brian. .com, .itv, .edu.
What was I saying earlier? .itgv, .wk. Yeah. So, buy them all. Use the promo code Linux.
Buy all of them. It'll be like the only website in the world that has every domain name, and it's charity pie drive for Brian. Whatever.
Yep. So God, check
that's
out.
A great idea.
Go over to clientpi.com.
Plus, GoDaddy would be thrilled.
Yeah.
Wait, what were we talking about?
Client Pi, but. Client pie? That's okay.
All right. That sounds good, too.
Now, we have got...
My clients don't deserve pies. I deserve pies.
We have got ourselves a heck of an OpenSUSE episode today.
A big one.
Huge one.
And I don't want to put everyone off. I know a lot of you out there running Ubuntu. I know a lot of Debian, a lot of Mandriva.
Couple
a lot
of Fedora.
Well, one or two, because I don't think many people use that anymore. Users out there. But stay tuned to this, because OpenSUSE and the SUSE team in general and the guys at Novell, the whole canopy that envelopes that which is the SUSE world, are doing a lot of really cool things.
Yeah.
And we think it really needs some attention, because there's oddly not a lot of attention on a few of these topics, which is weird considering how interesting they are. So pieces of functionality that honestly, I don't think it's going to be long before you start seeing Ubuntu and a few others start to try and copy.
Replicate.
So,
or just use,
so
let's, really.
Yeah, honestly, they should really just utilize it. But we're going to talk about those, and that's all coming up. But first, let's talk about Ubuntu. That way the show's balanced.
Yeah, and it's a good time in the development lifecycle, I think, right now to talk about some of the features that are coming up in Ubuntu 10.10, the next version.
Yes, sir.
A couple of things on this list grab my attention. Anything grab your fancy off the top of your head?
Let's kind of go down the list to start with. I've got a couple of things that I'm kind of curious about. In general.
I got to imagine the software center enhancements are probably up there for you as a software maker.
That's first and foremost for me. And they've got some enhancements here.
Like better search.
Better search is great. I like that. Better search is good. Improved dependency display. That's nice. I mean, it already uses apt on the back end to install everything. So it does really well. But I think they're basically going to make it so it shows what the dependencies are a little better you start installing.
One thing they'll be adding to the marketplace, it looks like, which is an interesting idea, is a place to find add-ons to applications. There's more and more applications like Chromium, Firefox, a lot of the chat programs, email programs, all have these extensions and add-ons, and now they're going to have featured sections in the marketplace
to
find
those. That's very cool. So you can go to one spot, Firefox extensions.
Right.
That's pretty cool. Now, the one thing that I'm not seeing a lot of information on is purchasing software through the store here. And I'm not seeing that.
Yeah, I've heard some mixed stuff on that so far.
Ubuntu 10.10 is supposed to be the time when we get that. The roadmap is the last update I saw says
paid apps.
That's paid apps is when this comes, so that third-party developers like myself would be able to sell applications through the application center here and
living
kablamo on your screen. Awesome.
I think I've
but
heard
I'm not seeing that,
and I put this firmly, everyone, in the rumor column. I think the last what I recall reading was we're going to have Canonical selected paid apps in 1010's rollout of the store.
So it's basically limited.
Limited. But then they're going to be building on the back end an infrastructure for user-submitted paid apps to be rolled out in a future update or in the next Ubuntu release.
So, hey, 1010 plus. Mr. and Mrs. Canonical, send me an email. I want more information. That's all I'm saying. Because honestly, I think this is a big deal.
Dude, if you could get in there when it's only a few selected apps, that could be big.
Well, not just for me. I mean, I'd like that. I mean, I know. For me, I want that. But even more importantly, it's going to be a big news item.
Yeah.
Like, everyone goes around talking about app stores. Like you remember when Sun was just had a rumor that they were going to have a Java app store? Do you remember that?
I do.
Nothing really came of that.
Nope.
That was just fluff. Like that'd hot have been air huge fluff for came Java. Out of nowhere.
That'd have been huge.
But just the mere mention of Java App Store, everyone was like, "Say what? App Store?" It was on CNN for a day. I'm like, "Are you kidding me? It's a huge news item." If Ubuntu had a nice app store, even if it wasn't that robust, it was just an app store, that's going to drive a lot of mind share. People are going to be reporting on that. You know, Gizmodo will report on it even. You know what I mean?
It's
like Lifehacker will have a big giant story
about
it.
Absolutely.
All the websites, the Register will cover it and probably will dog on it because Register seems to hate Linux nowadays.
Well, and we've been talking about how we think that the future differentiator between Linux distributions is going to be add-on software and services like the Software Center, but also, you know, we're seeing, I think, some major changes and improvements in the Ubuntu syncing service, Ubuntu One.
Yep.
One of the things they're going to be rolling into it is now they're going to call it OneConf. And I got to say, my understanding of all of what OneConf will encompass is a little early, a little shaky still. This is for sure one of the things I'll be checking out when I beta test. But the idea is OneConf will allow users to share their Ubuntu configurations between multiple machines. When they say that, they mean like
everything.
Settings, applications.
So theoretically, if you install, let's say, Inkscape. You install Inkscape from the Software Center. It can be added to your OneConf list of installed applications, and you can have that sync to your other systems.
Like a laptop and a desktop
systems.
Or
yeah,
netbook.
So the same versions, the same applications can be running across all of your different machines if you turn that on.
You and I
that's so cool.
Have mentioned that we kind of hack a rough version of this through Dropbox or Ubuntu One Now where we symlink our configuration files.
But this...
Yeah.
Man, I mean, I'm still using Dropbox for my online storage, but... Honestly, because I mostly use Ubuntu right now.
You've got Ubuntu One is going to have music sync, so all your purchased music will sync between all your machines.
And the OneConf, so all my config apps will be config
and
apps.
And what's great is they're not storing the apps in your Ubuntu One storage. My understanding is they are descriptors and links to the software store, so you will load up the software store. It will import essentially a list of your apps and then deploy them to your machine, which means you get the latest version in the repo. And you get the savings of your Ubuntu One storage sync. Storage.
And your application settings. So if you set up a bunch of settings that's understood by OneConf, that OneConf is
so
built
awesome.
To understand, you can sync all those across.
I love that. That kind of matches with this. So because you're going to be able to get these applications pushed to your machine, essentially, one of the things that they'll be working on, I don't believe it'll be fully done for 10.10, but they're going to be working on post-release application delivery. We're not talking like security updates, you know how like you keep getting Firefox point updates.
Let's be clear about what this is.
This is like a whole new if a whole new version of Firefox came out, like after 10.10 comes out, if Firefox 4 stable ships, they'll be able to slipstream it into the distro.
Yeah.
Into the actual repos. And it's only going to be certain permitted applications that way they can maintain stability. But you and I have just said for years that if you could take something like a long-term support edition but stay current on the user space applications,
that's a big
keep
deal.
The OS solid, stable, unchanging like you
super
need for a workplace,
nice.
I'm excited.
Super nice. Because currently, I mean, come on. We all know how to do that. You know, if we're running, you know, you can run Ubuntu, 8.04 right now and still run the latest version of a lot of the different stuff. But you end up having to add, custom repositories or go to places like getdeb.net or different places that package it for you.
Yeah, that works.
And that works. But for most people, they're not going to know how to do that. They're not going to want to know how to do that. They need something like this. So that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. A few other changes like better touchscreen support, Chromium is the default browser on a netbook, Things like that. This is all still early development, but we just thought, you know, some of these features are not just like nice to have for the Linux desktop, but these are features that'd be nice to have on any desktop operating system.
These are great.
And since we're having such an OpenSUSE heavy episode, we thought we got to give a little shout out to the progress in 10.10 that we're seeing so far.
Big progress. Need more information on that whole App Store thing, but otherwise, hey, this is looking pretty great.
And a great write up. We've got the link over in our show notes by Tech Throb. I think this is the first story they've ever had in our lineup. So TechThrob.com.
Throb. That's a name right there. Yep. Tech Throb.
I kind of get it.
Do you like it?
I kind of do. I kind of throb for tech myself sometimes.
Yeah. Do you?
Yeah. You know what I'm throbbing for right now, Brian?
Nope.
A little OpenSUSE.
Oh, good.
So I think with all of that said, well, that's all the news.
Thank God.
For this week.
All right. All right, now that we're done talking about Ubuntu so much, it's time to spend about 18 years talking about OpenSUSE.
Wow, okay.
We're not going to talk not that long, but we've got a lot of stuff to cover here. We're going to be covering the OpenSUSE build service, what it is, and why you absolutely care about it. And then we're going to talk about OpenSUSE Studio which is basically a way for you to build kind of your own little custom distros based on OpenSUSE.
That's cool.
To help with that, we got two of the SUSE dudes with us, Will and James. Why don't you, James, go ahead and tell everyone who you are and why we should care.
Okay. Hey, guys.
Howdy.
Thanks for having me on the show. So my name is James Tan. I'm a software engineer with SUSE Studio. So I've been working on Studio for the last, I don't know, 2-3 years. So ever since the project was started, I've been working on it. So I moved from Singapore, actually, over to Nuremberg, Germany. So I'm based in SUSE, which is, yeah.
So are we talking to you from Germany right now?
Yes, I am.
I love the internet.
Fantastic.
We've also got Will on the line. Will, what do you do with the OpenSUSE project?
Hi, well, my name's Will Stevenson, and I work here in Germany, up down the hall from James.
Oh, okay.
And I'm actually currently a member of the OpenSUSE Boosters team, which are charged with boosting and growing the OpenSUSE community. But I've been at SUSE for 5 years now, I think. And before that, I've been on the KDE team, on desktop teams, and various other things.
Wow. All right.
Nice. Well, thanks for joining us today, guys. I think so. These two projects are ones that we don't hear a lot about in the general Linux press. And it weirds me out a little bit that we don't hear about these all that much, considering how big they are in scope.
Should we wrap our brains around the build service for a minute? Would you guys give me a quick pitch of what the build service is exactly?
Okay. Well, the build service is two things. It's a web service. You can see it as a website. You can see it as a command line tool. And it is a way for you to build Linux software packages.
Okay.
But it's quite a lot more than that. What we did in SUSE, as we were opening up OpenSUSE, we had, say, more than 10 years of internal tools for building a distribution. And we looked around and we saw that distributions were becoming more and more similar. So we thought, well, the best way to make OpenSUSE really stand out is to share our tools, because we had what we thought were the best in the world tools for making a Linux distribution.
Cool. Right.
And that was actually presented as the OpenSUSE build service.
Okay. So this is essentially a collection of tools that you guys have always had in-house that you've streamlined now into something that the public can use?
Yeah. I mean, essentially now, 5 years down the line, it's actually a total rewrite.
Oh, okay.
The basic architecture remains very similar to what SUSE was being built with in, say, 1998 or so. Of course, it looked a lot prettier. we've done a 2.0 release, and that's now got this Web 2.0 kind of front end on it there, you can see.
Yeah, I mean, I love the web interface on it. I think it's one of the slickest looking. I also, hey, scroll down there for a sec. It's got this really neat little stat system on there that I think is so neat. I love that little glimpse of how things are going. I think that's really cool.
Those stats are absolutely addictive. I mean, when we're doing a release or something, we're just sitting there running watch on the internal stats, seeing those update every few minutes and seeing how many gigabytes of packages we're putting out. And those stats are available to all the projects as well, so they can use that as metrics, see how popular they are.
That's really cool.
That's awesome.
It's great to be able to get data like that.
But it's
really not just about packages. It's packages, it's projects. Out of those packages and projects, you can create repositories for all your popular Linux distributions.
And then you guys host the bandwidth for all of that and everything like that?
We do, yeah. That's quite a significant drain in our server room in terms of our bandwidth.
I would gather as much.
Yeah, I would think
we
so.
We have, I think, about 30 fairly large machines hosting the build service, and they run up to 200 VMs.
That's whoa. Awesome. That is awesome.
Are there other distros running on there to build other packages, or does everything run on OpenSUSE?
No, if you build packages for other distributions, so you can build for Red Hat, for the RHELs, for the Fedoras, for the SUSE, for the SLES, Mandriva, Ubuntu's, Debian, and all the Ubuntu variants, those are all run natively there. We set up a wow. VM. The VM's a completely naked VM. It's installed, and then the build is run natively using the distribution's native build tools.
So
you're getting the same out as you would be if you were sitting at home with your Debian box or your Fedora box and heating up your bedroom.
So the OpenSUSE project is taking on the task of running a bunch of different distributions releases, then letting people submit their source code and building the packages and then hosting the resulting package and even
providing a repo.
Yep.
Yeah.
And even if you want to then take those packages and make an ISO out of it, make a distribution, sorry, I'm losing your audio there.
Oh, okay. We got you.
Okay. So if you want to then make your own ISOs, make your live CD images, make an installable DVD image, even make a disk image of a pre-installed machine, you can do that too with it.
That is impressive.
So super cool. I mean, just to kind of reiterate on this, this is kind of one of the big things that we've talked about what is wrong with Linux right now is when a developer, a third-party piece of software, such as Firefox or whoever, wants to put their software out there, they have to sit down and repackage it for like 50 freaking distributions.
Isn't this kind of on a smaller scale what you do at your home office?
Is absolutely.
Run all these VMs?
And this... Really, what I need to be doing is I need to be using something like this.
Yeah.
Because this would save me.
But you've
me
tried
a ton
in the
time.
Past, and there has been some potential issues. But,
yeah, but
I know there's been.
Yeah,
exactly. It's been a little while.
And so basically, you could take that project, have it built, and have it packaged for you for all these different distributions, and have that taken care of for you, and even have a repo provided. That's just awesome.
What's the long-term benefit for OpenSUSE in this? Because this just seems really expensive.
It seems like you guys are just kind of like being generous philanthropists and just trying to give us free stuff. So what do you guys get out of this?
What we get out of that is a really powerful community of really good developers. I mean, people who are building for OpenSUSE build service are also going to be probably building for OpenSUSE. So we're going to be building a big collection of packages, all the latest stuff that's up there for OpenSUSE.
Oh, I get it. You're being sneaky. You're trying to trick us into making software for OpenSUSE.
Hey, that's
okay.
A good payoff, I
okay,
think.
I see.
That's a good trade. So the idea would be that because they're using your service, they're likely going to check that OpenSUSE build box, and now OpenSUSE gets a version, so the OpenSUSE users benefit.
Yeah, of course, if you don't want to build stuff for OpenSUSE, you're free to just build it for whatever distributions you want. You can run the build service yourself. There's even a turnkey appliance that you can just run that in a VM on your own machine and build your own packages.
That's cool.
Build your closed source stuff. Of course, OpenSUSE build service is there for open source software only. But there are a lot of commercial developers running their own instances. Things like drivers getting built there. Migo now, Linux Foundation, they're running their own instance of the build service on their servers.
That's great.
That's way cool.
That's a big name project to have using the service. That's really cool.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of development coming back from them. They're investing in it. They've got guys working on it. It's great.
Is that where some of the Migo and MAMO options came in the latest OpenSUSE 11.3, because I noticed there was some specific mentions in there about supporting that form factor style device, and I think was it MAMO that was listed in the feature set?
There was a Migo revision.
It was Migo. Okay. Yeah. Is that enabled because of their use of the build service, or is that totally unrelated?
The packages have been imported from a separate instance of the build service, and there had to be quite a number of tweaks made for OpenSUSE, but they're closely related. Okay. And now what we're doing is we should have the ability fairly soon to take a Migo package, build it to run on OpenSUSE, or build it to run in the Migo installation.
Nice.
So desktop, mobile, both things, one set of source code, just upload it, and it all gets rebuilt. And all those dependent packages, anything else that change after you change your Migos, glibc or something, they all get rebuilt after you. It's all fresh and it's all consistent.
That's really neat.
That's incredibly cool. Now, what I'm really curious about is what are your guys' stats? And you guys don't have to disclose this or whatnot if you don't know the information in front of you. But for what people are using for each distro, like is it mostly building for OpenSUSE right now? Or do you guys know if it's like 10% for Ubuntu or Fedora or those sorts of things? Are people really using it for the cross-distro nature currently? Or is it still mostly OpenSUSE?
I don't have the exact numbers on me. I understand that it's mostly OpenSUSE. There are some fairly large projects, some KDE sub projects, VLC. They're using the build service to build for all different distributions themselves.
Nice. There was a question coming out of our chat room specifically about being able to use RPM spec files, upload those to the build service, and get Debian packages out, like with DebBuild. Is that something that's doable?
That's not currently doable at the moment. If you want to have both Debs and RPMs, you need a separate Deb control file and your RPM spec file at the moment.
Got it.
You say at the moment, though.
So the developers still responsible for getting their packages ready to be built. It's just that the build service currently handles the building across multiple architectures for you.
That's right. It is aimed at two user groups at the moment. There's the users who would just want to get the fresh stuff. We want to make them happy, of course. And the developer who knows how to package software.
Got it. Mm-hmm.
Where we'd like to go in future with that, we've got some prototype tools under development, which you can just give them a tarball, and they will spit out RPM spec files and Debian control files.
That'd be awesome.
I want that.
Yeah, you want that.
If you could provide that would be okay by me.
Well, I don't know how much KDE development you do, but we have a tool that works very nicely for KDE and Qt software. Mm-hmm. It's called KDE OBS Generator. Google that one.
Okay.
Nice.
Hey, I got to say, you guys are getting some love from our chat room. I think we've got a few fans of the build service.
Yeah, no, it's a very, very cool project. What I would love to see is some of the major distros embrace this. I mean, I know that would... you know, not exactly be wonderful for your bandwidth bill, but I would love to see, Ubuntu and the Fedora project and hell, even Mandriva. I would love to see these projects just embrace this and say, you know what, here is one central location to make it. We're going to build all of our packages here. We're going to make it easy for everybody to get all of their software for whatever distro they want. So then picking your distro is just picking your distro.
The same software
is always going to be available.
I'll take one up on you
from the repos.
What if the distros maintained their own builds, their own packages? But wouldn't it be cool if a lot of the big name projects that are the upstream projects themselves, the owners of the originating source code, wouldn't it be cool if they all use the OpenSUSE build service? You could go get their clean build version of their own app. Like right now on Ubuntu, I probably pretty much have vanilla Firefox. I don't really think there's probably that much change to it. But wouldn't it be nice if I knew I could go get Mozilla's Firefox?
Right.
And I know I can go to the Mozilla and I can go find the Ubuntu Deb, but it'd be really nice if other projects like that, those stats just updated in real time.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. We're on Brian's screen over here. He has the OpenSUSE build service stats, and I don't know what page. Oh, monitor. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Build.opensuse.org/monitor.
That's cool.
You can go in there and just kind of geek out and watch the little bar charts there.
Now, before we shift gears, is there anything else we want to cover on the build service, or should we start talking about SUSE Studio?
No, let's hand over to James for a bit and let's let him tell you about what's new in the studio, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's dive into that.
Alrighty.
So James, let's give the high-level overview of what SUSE Studio is and is trying to accomplish here.
Okay, guys. So, as you have heard, and we'll describe the OpenSUSE build service, basically that lets you build packages really quick and easily. But what we do in Studio is we kind of bring it up a notch. So once you have the packages you want, end of the day, it's really useful to have a system running that, right? So Studio kind of gives you the ability to create your own software appliances very quickly and easily. So if you look at, you're looking at a website now, right?
Yep.
Custom Linux, quick and easy. So what is an appliance, right? So an appliance is basically your operating system, which in this case, right, it's your OpenSUSE or your SUSE Linux Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your operating system, you have your application, so whatever applications that you have from the official OpenSUSE repositories, from the OBS or anywhere you can edit from. And then you add configuration. So these three things, your OS, your application, and your configuration file. So this gives you an appliance.
So I see. So this is creating a virtual machine.
Right. So we have two main types of appliances that we support. You have your physical appliances and you have your virtual appliances.
Right.
Right. So for physical appliances, right now we support various formats. Like you can create a live CD, DVD. So you can create a kind of a media and then, you know, basically a customized OpenSUSE distribution, if you will, with your own packages, you know, whatever software you want. And then you can put this in a computer, you can put it up, and it's going
to
work.
What I find fascinating is the concept of being able to roll your own distro isn't too new. I don't know of any other. You're having all of this done through a web interface, right? And then it just produces on the back end. It then creates it and produces a downloadable file for me.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's slick.
The nice thing about Studio, because you know, actually, if you use OpenSUSE build service, actually, it has Kiwi support. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with OpenSUSE Kiwi.
No.
Basically, Kiwi is a big Perl script.
Okay.
So it takes an XML file, you know, a bunch of configuration. And it's going to spit out an image for you. So SUSE Studio is actually just a web front end for this.
Okay.
And the nice thing about it, that, you know, because it's a web application, you can be running your Macintosh, you can be running Windows, you can be sitting in an internet cafe somewhere.
I could be on an iPad. What?
No. Great. No. Right.
I could be on an iPad making a Linux distro. That's ridiculous.
I actually do that on my iPad too. So there are some limitations because, let me get on to that in a little bit.
Okay.
So I see some questions in the chat room.
Yeah, yeah. So absolutely.
So actually, I wasn't done with the output format. So
okay.
So let me just rewind.
Yeah, finish that up.
Right. So back to the physical format. So we have the live CD, live DVDs. We also have the USB format. So basically, this gives you a hard disk image. You can take this image,
flash it to a USB stick, and
you can do it to your hard drive, so you can preload the system.
Awesome.
Or you can put the same image on a USB stick, and then it's a live bootable USB stick.
That's cool.
So you also have the virtual formats, of course. So you can create your VMware appliances. You can create Xen appliances. And all these different formats. And we're working really hard to add even more formats. So very soon we're going to have support for Amazon EC2.
Oh my gosh.
EC2 appliances. And because it's all a web application, so you can just click deploy and it's going to send it up to Amazon and it's going to run immediately. You don't have to download anything. It's just going to work.
So cool.
That is so
very,
nice.
Very cool. And just to be clear, so you can set what packages you want to use, and that's cool. But you can even set you can personalize it with your own logos and backgrounds if you want. I mean, it's a full distro customizer, distro builder almost. I mean,
and as an IT person, you don't know how often I just randomly need to fire up a really quick Linux VM.
Yeah.
And how often I've needed to really quickly have a bootable USB thumbstick and I have to go through this process of getting an image file and all this stuff. I mean, this, you guys, for my day job, is going to make my life mucho better.
Mucho better.
I'm glad to hear that.
And this is really – Brian and I, over the last few episodes of Season 12, have been talking a lot about how we think the next – big thing in Linux distros is probably going to have to be things like this value added beyond just the packages and the theme kind of a thing. And you guys are not just sort of ahead, but I mean, you guys are like a quantum leap ahead of everybody else. I know the other guys, like Fedora has their tool to spin a distro, but again, that's an inside the distro thing. I mean, the beauty of this, I literally could be at a client's network in a web browser and generate an image file.
And this is so much more usable than the other solutions that are out there.
Oh, supremely more usable.
If you look at, if you just go and look at the screenshots or actually just walk through it, I mean, you've got everything from, you know, calculating live, you know, what the actual space used on the disk is, you know, whether or not it's going to fit onto a CD, exactly how many packages you're using. It gives you all the details you need as you're building it. Live, you don't have to do any calculations yourself. You don't have to figure anything out. Basically, you just get a version of OpenSUSE that has what you want with the look and feel you want and everything else. And it's just point and click. It's retard easy. It's it's kind of which is amazing. It's really, really great. So people out there could do whatever they want. If they wanted to put a gaming version of SUSE together, they really could with this.
Or a Jupyter Broadcasting Edition.
Yeah.
Well, that's really
cool. So one really nice thing, if I could add, is that, you know, we calculate the dependencies you need. So if you say I want an Apache web server, we're just going to pull in all the dependencies for
I see
you.
That. Yeah, so I don't have to know that Apache 2 needs Apache 2-pref, Apache 2-work, Apache 2-utils, all that kind of stuff. I just know I want Apache 2.
Mm-hmm.
And what and do you – have you guys seen any – oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So what you can do in Studio is you can, you know, you choose – you start from a base template. So you can, you know, choose from a server template or a desktop template. You select the software that you want. You know, you configure the appliance as you like. And then, you know, the really nice thing is that after you build it, you know, usually you have to download the whole thing, you know, fire up VMware or whatever to test it, right? So that takes a bit of time, you mm-hmm. know, because if you build a simple LAMP stack, for example, it's only going to take 2 minutes to build right. on SUSE Studio. So we don't really want to spoil this experience by getting people to download it and then they have to install, you know, something to test it.
I love
it.
That.
So we have this feature called Test Drive, and I see you're looking at it. So
yep.
So basically, once it's done, you can just click on Test Drive, and it's going to boot up the appliance.
It spins right up the image. The
right.
Oh, so, my so gosh.
That is just nerd happy. I love this.
NT client that's going to connect to our servers. So you don't have to download anything. You can just, you know, use it, test it. If you're missing a package, you just go back, you know, add the package, and boom.
And then test drive it again.
Mm-hmm.
Holy
and,
crud muffins,
and,
dude.
And so
awesome.
How does that work if I choose, do you just happen to have a VM server or a Zen server or whatever type I made? Or is it always a Zen server on a Zen image on the back end? How does that work exactly from a technical standpoint?
We pretty much, yeah. So if you run a Zen server, we will actually use QEMU KVM to wrap it in the background.
Okay.
And it's going to boot up, and then we use VNC to connect to it. And if you go back to the test drive screen, we have a few more features on top of that. So one nice feature we have is the modified files, right? So when you boot up a system, you know, you can change
that?
Files on it.
Oh, okay.
It's going to show you a list of the files that have changed from the time you have booted your appliance to its current state.
No kidding.
So this is really nice if you say, I don't know, if you want to install an Oracle database, right, that has some proprietary Java installer, so which you can't, you know, maybe easily do in the RPM section. So you can then run the installer here, you know, in this
right.
full test drive environment, and then you can look at the exact files that have changed on the file system. And then you can just choose, I want this file, I want that file, and add those changes back to the original appliance.
Yeah. Any plans to generate revenue from this, or do you foresee it for now remaining a free service?
The build service is a free service. It always will be a free service. It's been free software since the get go.
Awesome.
Unlike some other collaboration platforms we could mention.
Snaps.
So
Launchpad. Sorry, excuse me. I had a little launchpad.
Okay,
in my throat.
Chris.
I just had a little launchpad. Stuff
you did. You did.
It's
I
okay.
saw that.
Didn't say that. the build service itself and the Kiwi, the tools it's built on, they're always going to be open source. You can grab the appliance now and install them.
I think
to us, they actually enable us to make revenue further up the stack, but we believe in those tools being free software.
Very neat. Are you guys?
That's incredibly cool. I mean, but it just seems like, so this seems like the kind of thing, I mean, where I would go up here and I'd end up creating a couple of different images and toying around with all sorts of different things for a couple different clients and, you know, one just for me and then one with the Jupiter Broadcasting logos on it just because I can. And I'm going to end up eating up about, you know, 30 gigs of your guys' hard drive space. It just seems like it's taking up so much resources to offer such a free service. I mean, how on earth can you guys do that? It boggles my mind.
Boggles theirs too, it sounds like.
All right.
I can't comment on what actually powers the studio. James can maybe tell you about that, but we got some fairly hefty equipment sponsors. If you look on the OpenSUSE Build Service homepage,
keep us
in hardware. But it is a serious drain, and we've actually thinking about moving that out into a separate location because we've actually over-demanded what the German electricity utilities can apply to our building.
Wow.
Good guys.
So, yeah, the main electricity failed, and about a second later, the secondary independent electricity supply also blew like a 10-foot deep hole in the pavement outside the office. So,
whoa, serious power draw.
Yeah, there's a lot of work going through that building.
Oh, I love that. That is fantastic. Now, see, honestly, That's the sort of news story you guys need to put out there. The OpenSUSE build service and SUSE Studio blows a 10-foot hole into the pavement outside of your thing because of the power.
I want to see pictures of this.
That right there is a news grabber.
For that, the studio site actually is running a data center in Waltham. So it's actually just the build service alone that's blowing up the powers.
One of the last things I wanted to ask you that I noticed about the build service that I didn't quite understand, but I think I get it. I just want to clarify is I noticed that also there's like pre-assembled community versions of packages that you could roll into your own distro. So like there's a KDE4 reloaded, GNOME reloaded. There's even featured appliances that I could even go grab myself that somebody else already built. Am I following that?
Right. So actually that's something I wanted to add on as well. So what you've just what you're looking at now is actually what we call the studio or the SUSE gallery.
Yeah.
So this is one of the new things that we're actually going to have a big launch later this week. Just to give you a sneak peek.
Oh, nice.
So on Tuesday we're celebrating the 1 year anniversary of SUSE Studio.
Congrats.
So, you know, on Tuesday we will have a pretty big announcement. So you see some press release about SUSE Studio and SUSE Gallery.
Right.
Nice. So there'll be some changes to this website. So keep watching.
Those
this
are coming. I saw that on your blog.
Right. So very cool. So the blog has some details. But basically, you know, Studio gives you the ability to create your appliances. But what was missing was a way to kind of share this, you know, appliance with the community. And for people who may not want to actually create content, but, you know, if they just want a server or a desktop they can use, they can just go to gallery and just grab an image. So you can.
Numbers. I got some great numbers here for
go
you.
Go for it.
Lay it on us.
James, if I may, on Studio, when I looked on Friday on Studio, you have 77,214 users. That was Friday at 6 o'clock.
Congrats.
You have 226,070 appliances being built there.
What?
And they've built 416,000 times. Since it was rebooted.
Whoa. Since it was rebooted. All right. And Will, was there anything you want to touch on?
Yeah, I've got two news items for you. Firstly, coming up in October, we have the OpenSUSE conference, our second edition of the conference all about the community and the distribution and all the people around it. That is from October 20th to 23rd in Nuremberg in Germany.
That's too far to drive.
While we're on the subject of working, I'd like to point out that we are actually looking for another engineer on the OpenSUSE build service. So if what stirs your tea is packaging, if it's Perl, if it is Ruby, if it is Python, then think about coming to work for us here in Nuremberg.
Did you just say if what stirs your tea? Was that the phrase you just said?
I think that's a first.
I am an Englishman.
Is that a
I hadn't heard that one. That's great.
Is that an in the office position or is that a remote work position?
I think we could be flexible for the right candidate.
Who should they contact if they think they might be the right person?
If you go to build.opensuse.org, there are links to the extremely complicated careers URL.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, guys.
Yeah, been great talking to you.
On the show.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. I'm pretty confident at this point that this wraps the show
Feels
up.
Feels solid, Brian.
This concludes the entire season right there.
Big show.
We started the season with this episode. Boom, we're at this episode.
I like that.
That's
like,
the way we went.
Like 10 weeks later.
I was going to try and talk about like what we were talking about back then. Can't remember.
Oh, I think I remember.
What would we start it on?
Google declares war on Apple might have been the first episode of the new season. I don't remember, though. I can't remember. I'll have to check it. But I might be right on that.
I barely remember that topic.
Yeah.
That was years ago now.
So that wraps up this episode. At this point in the shooting, we don't know if this has been a two-part show or a one-part show.
Yeah, it depends on how long the interview went. We're going to try and squeeze it all into one, but we'll find out. If it's not, we'll tell you, and you'll get the second part later.
Yeah.
How about that right there?
I like that.
That's pretty good stuff. All right. If you want to get a hold of us, there's Twitter.
Yeah.
There's Brian Lunduk and Chris LAS.
Yep.
There's Facebook, just Jupiter Broadcasting. Boom. On the Facebook.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
There's the
Jupiter Colony.
Forum.
Fantastic. Good stuff.
There you have it. All right, everyone. Well, we'll be back next Sunday with an all-new episode of...
An all-new season. What do we bring you next season, Chris? What do you think we're going to lay into people's eyes and ears next season?
We'd love to take suggestions, too, so let us know over Jupiter Colony.
Who knows? What will the theme be? Will there be a theme, or will we just go by the seat of our pants? We'll cowboy it. Who knows?
I have a feeling which direction it's going to go. Tune in to find out.
I'm excited.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Linux Action Show. We'll see you next week in season 13.
Uh-oh.